What up? It's your man, D. Real, the Black Panther, stalking the urban jungle and vibranium ideas, bringing you yet another episode of Be Real with D. Real. I know what a bunch of you are saying. What happened to the theme music? I forgot. Bottom line, that's all I can tell you. I forgot this week. Maybe I will turn on some music for you on the tail end of the show. How about that? That worked for y'all. Okay. Tonight's subject is blaxploitation. We're talking about the history of blaxploitation. And is it set? First of all, I know a lot of people are saying, what on earth is going on with this out here topic? And why is he talking about it? Well, if you would just hang on for a second and let me explain it to you, I'll show you how it makes a whole lot of sense. Now, in order for you to understand where I'm coming from with this show, you must first understand what a blaxploitation movie is. I know that most of my listeners already know what a blaxploitation movie is, but anybody pretty much born after, I don't know, maybe like 1983 and on, probably won't be directly familiar with blaxploitation movies. You heard about them from somebody, or you know, your uncle got a copy of the Mac, or Superfly, or Coffee, or Foxy Brown, or something like that. And those are just movies that's always been in the collection. You never knew the history. You just knew it was a bunch of people who looked like you as a black person in that movie. Blaxploitation, as it sounds, is a compound word. And it is the joining of two different types of genres, the exploitation movie and black people. Exploitation movies, for lack of a better term, were simply movies that were low budget, and they sought to cash in on a particular genre, on a particular theme. Doing research, I found out that exploitation movies go as far back as the 30s. There was a movie in 1939, somewhere in that time period, called Reefer Madness. And Reefer Madness, just like the title implies, was a movie about the curse of smoking marijuana. As you might understand, in the mid to late 30s, you know, you had the depression going on, and somebody comes out with a movie like this. Oh, my God, it had an impact. Back then, it had a huge impact. Back in 1939, people regarded marijuana like we regard stuff like heroin now, or meth, or, you know, stuff. It was like that. It was like, oh my God, are you kidding me? There were exploitation films about older men marrying young or teenage girls in the 1940s. These were actually movies. They weren't mainstream, so we didn't get to hear a lot about them. So along comes late 60s, early 70s, let's say 1971. Wait, hang on, let's say 1971. Probably not the most well-known, but what a lot of historians regard as the first blaxploitation movie is a movie with a rather quaint title called Sweet Sweetback's Bad Ass Song. And Bad Ass is spelled with five S's. Just to give you a bit of an indication of how badass Sweet Sweetback was. Most blaxploitation movies centered around the same theme, and that theme was usually some white people And when I say white people, I mean a particular demographic of white people. I don't mean all white people. So white people that are listening, don't think I'm talking about you. Usually the white people in these movies were either corrupt cops, they were either Italian mafia, or just some kind of mean, abusive individual in a position of power who basically either abuses, incarcerates, or kills another black person. And this prompts that black person or this black person's remaining surviving family members or relatives or whatever to investigate the situation of whatever caused the death. And ultimately, it ended up in, okay, black folks is getting ready to get revenge on the white people. And that theme worked from 1971 till about, I'd say, 80, 84. There were still blaxploitation movies coming out. But the 70s were riddled with blaxploitation movies. And Sweet Sweet Back Badass Song was regarded, well, not regarded, but it was the first true blaxploitation movie, one of them anyway. Basically, it followed the story of Sweetback. Sweetback was, if I remember the movie correctly, he was accused of killing somebody. And the cops came to get this Black Panther. And, yeah, 71, there were still Black Panthers. They got handcuffed together and they ended up going on this adventure together. And basically, Sweetback beat the crap out of the cops that arrested him. And all through this adventure, he's having sex and he's fighting people and he's running into bikers. And ultimately, there's a showdown between him and the cops. And Sweetback manages to make it to the Mexican border. Yay! And that was essentially what most blaxploitation movies were about. Black folks taking shit off of white people until they just got tired of it, and Empire Struck Back. That's essentially what the movie is. That's essentially what Sweet Sweet Back Badass Song was about. Now, let me give you a little insight about the movie Sweet Sweet Back Badass Song. Sweet Sweet Back, we just gonna call it SSBS. SSBS starred a little-known actor at the time by the name of Melvin Van Peebles. Sound kind of familiar? Yeah, because he has a even more popular, well, not real popular, but more popular than him. He has a son named Mario Van Peebles. And Mario Van Peebles actually makes an appearance in SSBS playing a younger version of Sweetback. Isn't that cool? Another impressive thing about Sweet Sweetback Badass Song is that it was directed, produced, scored, and starred Melvin Van Peebles. An impressive feat in any era. Another totally weird fact about this movie, Bill Cosby loaned Melvin Van Peebles $50,000 to assist with making this movie. Other than that, this movie was shot completely on Melvin Van Peebles' dime. Call that blaxploitation as I would a black achievement. How many black men you know that are writing, producing, making their own movies or were in 1971, there were not a whole lot of them. Now, the same time in 1971, I don't know if it was on purpose or if it just happened to be, okay, this is the time of the year for us to do some things. The theme to SSBS is done by, wait for it, Earth, Wind, and Fire. Now, in 1971, Earth, Wind, and Fire had been in the game for a little while, but I would think having Earth, Wind, and Fire do a song on your movie in 1971 was about as cool as having Kendrick Lamar score Black Panther. So you see what I'm saying? I am making parallels with that era and this one, and that's a lot of what this show is about, is making parallels, and the common theme with it is the blaxploitation genre. Now, again, like I was saying, in 1971, there was another movie that came out that was also too coined a blaxploitation flick, and you'll probably recognize it, Shaft. Yes, yes, yes. 1971 saw the appearance of Richard Roundtree, who was at the time a black model and was asked to do this movie that was directed by Gordon Parks. Gordon Parks? That Gordon Parks? Yes. That Gordon Parks, photographer, author, musician, Gordon Parks, in a movie that starred someone as influential and prestigious as Mr. Gordon Parks. John Shaft is a detective. He's a detective that is trying to, if I remember the plot correctly, and sometimes I get Shaft and Shaft Big Score mixed up. I think Shaft was the one where he had gangsters that had kidnapped this black guy's daughter. That's Shaft Big Score. Anyway, there were dirty cops involved. Let's just put it like that. Prevailing theme in blaxploitation movies, whether it's done on purpose or whether that just happens to be the norm, is that 99.9% of the white people in blaxploitation movies are evil. They have a hidden agenda. They're out to get black people. They're out to exploit black people. They're out to hurt black people. They're out to incarcerate black people. I wonder where that theme comes from. Why do all the people who make these blaxploitation movies seem to think that all the white people are evil? Shaft had a strong male lead in it. I would even hazard to say Richard Roundtree was probably one of the first black sex symbols on screen. I mean, people. And I can only base it on what I saw. And I know, I remember, and for my people in Kansas City out there, I can remember as clear as day going to the I-70 drive-in and watching Shaft sitting in the back seat. And every time Shaft came on the screen, my mama was like, I didn't understand it at the time, but yeah. And Richard Roundtree got a lot of work as far as modeling. Pick up an old copy of Jet or Ebony in between like 71 and 73. All you'll see Brosheen ads and black this and black that product ads with Richard Roundtree on them. Heck, I can remember even going to the bathroom, going to the barbershop, and on the chart that had the different styles of haircuts, how you wanted your haircut, Richard Roundtree was on the haircut chart. 668, I'd have forgot my number, 646, excuse me, 668-2268. Again, that's 646-668-2268. I'm digging off into the history. And right now, I'm at Shaft. I'm at 1971. 1971 was certainly not the end of blaxploitation movies. Matter of fact, it was just the beginning. And now these first two movies that I've told y'all about, Sweet Sweetback Badass Song and Shaft, were basically helmed by African Americans. A strange thing happened, though, in, I guess, like the mid-70s, blaxploitation films started to be and directed by non-African-American writers, directors, producers, that kind of a thing. And because the people making these movies did not have a feel for the situation, the diaspora, if you will, of Black culture, they just kind of made it up as they went. And we got a lot of overacting in blaxploitation movies, and we got a lot of misrepresentation of what Black people are and aren't. For instance, Cake If You Will, Foxy Brown is probably one of the more prolific blaxploitation movies made that had a strong female lead. Veteran actress, well, she's a veteran now, but Pam Grier was a phenomenal actress, and Foxy Brown was a movie about a gal who she had a government agent boyfriend, and he got killed by drug dealers, of course, white drug dealers. And you know what's so strange to me? All the drug dealers, or most of the drug dealers, or the drug distributors, should I say, in these blaxploitation movies are white. When did that change? Why all of a sudden when you think drug dealer, you think a Black person? But anyway, there was a lot of graphic, as I remember, a lot of graphic sex. Yeah, Foxy had her boobs exposed quite a bit in that movie, as well as Coffee, another movie with Pam Grier. I think it was a win because it had a strong female lead in it, and it was also not so much of a win because that female lead got exploited a lot before she decided, you know, she was going to get a sawed-off shotgun and shoot somebody in their man parts. A motion picture company called American International Pictures produced Foxy Brown, and one of the bigwigs at American International Pictures was a man by the name of Samuel Z. Arkoff. I don't have to tell you a man with that name, with a name like Samuel Arkoff, is not of African-American descent. He's a Jewish guy, as you might probably have figured out. And I think Mr. Arkoff was largely responsible for the recurring formulaic themes that you would see in many patient movies. I think it was kind of a thing where, and I'm going to go off on a tangent here, but I think it was kind of a thing where, and if you're old enough to remember, and I might be dating myself, but as a kid, I grew up watching Saturday morning cartoons. Saturday morning cartoons, that used to be a thing. Anyway, I grew up watching Saturday morning cartoons, and the vast majority of Saturday morning cartoons that came on in the 70s were produced by Hanna-Barbera. Now, and you can check me if you want to, but I think probably Hanna-Barbera's best cartoon ever, the one that kids responded to demographically the most, was Scooby-Doo. Scooby-Doo. And for the record, I hate Scooby-Doo. I can't stand Scooby-Doo. I actually suffered through Scooby-Doo because there was only like four channels back then, and the cartoon you wanted to watch came on after Scooby-Doo, and the cartoons that was on were worse than Scooby-Doo. So I basically kind of had to suffer through Scooby-Doo to get to the cartoon I wanted to watch. But Scooby-Doo was a hit, and Scooby-Doo came out with Scooby-Doo. It worked so much, they just kept regenerating it every year with Scooby-Doo. Then it was Scooby-Doo, Where Are You? Then it was the Scooby-Doo Mysteries, and then it was the Scooby-Doo Dynamite Hour. Then it was Scooby-Doo, Scrappy-Doo. It went on and on. And Scooby-Doo had a recurring thing every week. Okay, and the people who've seen the movie version of Scooby-Doo know. Okay, the gang stumbles on something, and it's supposedly haunted, or there's a monster, or there's something going on. And because they're professional mystery solvers, they would get in there and solve that shit quick, every week, within 20 minutes. Mystery solved. Well, Scooby Snack, or whatever it was for. But for some strange reason, that formula worked. And so they started making this plethora of shows that centered around that same theme. Speed Buggy, a talking dune buggy that drives around with teenagers solving mysteries. Jabberjaw, a shark that goes around underwater with teenagers solving mysteries. See what I'm getting at here? Okay. Hanna-Barbera made a run on the 70s and the 80s using that same formulaic theme. Very much like what Mr. Samuel Arkoff did with the blaxploitation movies that he and his company, American International Pictures, produced. So now, some notable blaxploitation movies that were good, but were totally white. I don't know if y'all even remember a movie in 1972 called The Legend of Nigger Charlie. Star Fred Williams. Fred Williamson was in a lot of blaxploitation movies. Probably the blaxploitation movie. Fred Williamson is an ex professional football player. Much like his buddy, who he was in blaxploitation movies with, one Jim Brown. Blaxploitation movies. Now, Hammer, Slaughter, Black Caesar, Bucktown. These were all movies that either starred Fred Williamson or Jim Brown. And then there was Three the Hard Way that starred Jim Brown and Fred Williamson. All of these movies produced in the 70s, I could go to any one of them, pull up the information. Here I am. Let's go with Slaughter. Distributed by American International Pictures. Wait, Is that a theme? Oh, well, let's go to Legend of Nigga Charlie. Legend of Nigga Charlie. Ooh, excuse me. Legend of Nigga Charlie was produced by Paramount. What? Paramount Pictures made a blaxploitation movie? They even made a sequel. The Soul of Nigga Charlie. Wow. Interesting. I really don't know what to say about that. Blackula. Remember Blackula? That's the Black Dracula. Yep. Produced by American International Pictures. Abby. Oh, that was the Exorcist blaxploitation movie. And look at that. Yes, American International Pictures. So from about 71 clear up to about 79, they were running stuff. American International Pictures were running stuff. Your boy Dolemite. Now, they were Dimension Pictures. Dimension Pictures produced the series of Dolemite movies. A man by the name of Lance Woolner. Woolner. Lance Woolner. Was the producer or the head exec over at Dimension Pictures. Dimension Pictures eventually, after the blaxploitation thing wore out, they changed their name to New World Pictures, and they continued to make exploitation movies that were of a different theme. They weren't blaxploitation movies. They were just exploitation movies. Again, 646-668-2268. If you got something you want to say, or you want to chime in for a second, or you want to tell me, dude, I didn't know nothing about all of this. But anyway, it goes on and on and on until about 79. 79, I think, was the last year that they really came out nonstop with just nonstop blaxploitation movies. American International Pictures, I guess they figured they had made all of their money, and so they were done fooling around with us. Is Blaxploitation poised to make a return to mainstream audiences? Because whether or not we realize it, blaxploitation movies, they never 100% died. Every 2 or 3 years or so, we would get a movie that was just, it was just incredibly black and incredibly racial. In the 70s, you got to understand something. It was an era of black empowerment. It was an era of black pride. It was an era of, controversy. It was an era of controversy. There was a question about the fidelity, the honesty of what was going on in the White House. There was the scandal, the Watergate thing going on. Now, look, if you will, at how the early 70s and the events that were going on in the early 70s parallel perfectly to what's going on now in 2018. Controversy surrounding our president, an era of black pride, of black empowerment, controversy in our neighborhoods, policemen doing whatever they want to do, however they want to do it. And on June 15th, a reimagined version of Superfly, a blaxploitation movie I had not mentioned. Superfly came out in 1972. And it was basically a movie about a successful cocaine dealer who wanted to get out of the game, and he wanted to make one big score and say, I'm done, I'm leaving forever, I'm out, I'm done. But his buddy didn't want to get out, and the people who was distributing the cocaine to him didn't want him out because he was making money for them. Enter 2018 version of Superfly, same kind of thing. And Priest is updated for 2018, and rather than being a drug dealer in New York, his enterprise is in Atlanta, and he deals in cryptocurrency and hustling and things like that that are going on now. And he's tired of the game, and he wants to make one big score and get out, but the man ain't gonna let him go that easy. So, see how 1971 and 2018 kind of bookend each other right now. The climate, I believe, is set for something like that. So depending on how successful this new Superfly is or isn't, it's that genre again. And what I wanted to mention about blaxploitation movies never actually waning, you may not realize it, but you've been watching blaxploitation movies for a minute. The Last Dragon, 85. I'm Gonna Get You, Sucker, 88. Action Jackson, 92. Jackie Brown, 97. Pootie Tang, 2000. Undercover Brother, 2002. Black Dynamite, 2009. And even if you watched Proud Mary in 2018, it had a lot of the earmarks of a blaxploitation movie. And if I ain't mistaken, Ms. Taraji co-produced that movie. So, again, see what I'm saying? And that was January when that movie came out. So Taraji is getting down very much like Melvin Van Peebles a good 30, 40 or so years, well, 40 plus years before Taraji was even thinking about doing movies. So, I mean, do you see the parallels? Okay, we have a voice in 2018. We have the Black Lives Matter movement. We have all kind of things going on that are saying, we need to empower ourselves. We need to step up and say, okay, we're not just going to be relegated to the back, and we're not going to just be treated any kind of way. We're not going to be talked to any kind of way. We're not going to allow people to handle us. You know what I mean? Very much like 1971, where there was a lot of, we ain't having, you know. I can remember, you know, my cousin, coming home with a great big old Afro man and wearing all black and saying he was getting ready to get down with the Panthers, you know. And, you know, as kids, we thought that was cool. I mean, you are down with anything that is cool as a kid. And to rock, you know, the all black with the black jacket and the black gloves, that was cool to us. We thought that was real cool. Yeah, go ahead and do that. Right on. You know? And somehow it just kind of died out. Well, I won't say somehow. I will say there was a lot of systematic elimination of the Black Panthers. We could get into it as much as you want to, but bottom line, there was a lot of FBI involvement in the eradication of the Black Panthers. So let's just leave it at that. 1971 saw a lot of outspoken artists Joni Mitchell. I don't know if a lot of y'all know who Joni Mitchell is. She used to date James Taylor at one point. I don't know if y'all know who James Taylor is. I know the white people are going to know who James Taylor is. But a lot of the music she made was very prolific. Gay pride, as we know it, was fought for in 1971. And a lot of people don't know that. A police raid started gay pride as we know it. They were down on gay people in New York, and I think up until like the mid 70s, gay behavior was illegal in 49 of the 50 states. So that kind of prolific, outspoken activity, you know, it's very, very much like the outspoken, prolific activity in the LGBTQ community now, where they're saying we've had enough, we ain't gonna take no more, we coming out, and we don't care about how you feel about us coming out or not coming out. But just, again, I want to touch on the bookend concept of what I'm trying to convey in the show. It never really went anywhere. Like I said, we got little injections of black pride, you know, to tide us over, like I said, in the movies that we mentioned. And even so far as, you know, things like Boys in the Hood and Menace to Society and Juice and things like that, kind of helped to perpetuate, you know, that trope of blacks being in situations where they have to deal with whites, and not only overcoming those situations, but putting foot to ass in a prolific. I can remember watching blaxploitation movies and saying to myself, damn, I want to be like that. Jim Kelly. You know, a lot of people know who Jim Kelly is. Jim Kelly is was the black martial artist who starred in Bruce Lee's movie Enter the Dragon. And he was the one that got chopped to death by Mr. Han with the steel hand. But he came back and he had his own, because they always like to kill the black guy off back in the 70s. But he came back and he had his own little string of movies. He had one called Hot Potato, where he was this secret agent and he was dealing with the man, for lack of a better term. He also had one called Black Samurai, and it was pretty much the same kind of theme. Black guy who knows karate beats up everybody. Even though it generated, the vast majority of blaxploitation movies generated a source of pride for us, it generated a lot of income for people like Paramount Pictures and Samuel Z. Arkoff over at American International Pictures. I mean, did none of that money go back into the black community? That went straight in Arkoff's pocket. That went straight in Paramount's pocket. They didn't make not one Martin Luther King Boulevard with that money. They didn't do any kind of urban renewal. Well, that was the term back then. Urban renewal. There was no urban renewal imparted to any black neighborhoods with any of that money made. I don't have a figure right now, but I can tell you, American International Pictures made hundreds of millions of dollars with blaxploitation movies. American International Pictures was already banging out stuff. The American International Pictures, what their claim to fame was taking international features and bringing them over to the state. American International Pictures is responsible for Johnny Sacco and His Flying Robot. I know a lot of y'all listening remember that. Rough. Giant robot launch. Yeah. That was them. Okay. They even made movies like what was it called? Passion Plantation. And it was a slavery movie. And it was kind of like those movies you watch or used to watch late night on Cinemax, you know, that they were basically just like softcore porn. You know, there was Mandingo, there was From, the Mandingo sequel. You know what I'm saying? Nobody black, a lot of black people starred in those movies, but nobody black made money other than the actors. So we're in a day and age now where I think we're a little more smarter, in a business sense, where we're not gonna fall for the okie doke with making money, and I think what would make blaxploitation resurgence most successful is if we put focus on the pride and put focus on keeping it BLAC to the K. Black directed, black produced, black screenplay, black cinematography, black music, you know. And then that's another thing. Shaft in 71, Isaac Hayes did the world famous score for Shaft that everybody knows. Won an Oscar for it. Okay? At least somebody at MGM said, we need to make sure that we put this man up for something because, I mean, Isaac Hayes was doing stuff with music in the 70s that wasn't nobody doing. You know what I'm saying? Take that back. Barry White was doing it. But Isaac Hayes and Barry White and Curtis Mayfield. Isaac Hayes, Barry White, Curtis Mayfield. You know what? I could name some more people. Let's just say what Isaac Hayes was doing in the 70s was prolific, and he made a nice chunk of money. Side note, Isaac Hayes also starred in a blaxploitation movie, Truck Turner, distributed by, American International Pictures. Nichelle Nichols, who played Uhura in Star Trek, is also in Truck Turner, and she plays a bottom bitch. Yes, Uhura plays a bottom bitch. She was a good one too. She got shot at the end though. Anyway, blaxploitation movies have a unique in our society. Pride. I can't keep harping on that enough. Us being proud of who and what we are speaks volumes. It speaks volumes of tapping the potential of what we can be, what we should be. Art imitates life. And if we can look on the screen and see something strong, if we can look on the screen and see, that's why Black Panther made the impact that it did this year, because we were looking at us and we were not ashamed of what we were seeing. Again, there's an issue with, I mean, nobody ever says anything about it, and I don't make a big deal about it because I love Black Panther so much, but not a lot of us behind the scenes making money with Black Panther. a lot of us in front of the screen making money with Black Panther, but not so much in the back. And I give that one to him simply because of the impact it had and the source of pride that it was. I think blaxploitation is set to make a comeback. Whether or not it makes a successful comeback, that remains to be seen. Is there a place for them? Yeah. There are people right now that this very second who need something to speak to the masses. And this is just me, and this is just a thought. Not to get too far off the beaten track, but this is the way my mind works. And if I'm crazy, you can call me crazy. If I'm not, you know, light bulb moment for everybody. Let's take a current event. Say, failed decision to make it a rule that if you're going to be out on the field during the national anthem, you must be standing. Why not make a movie? And it doesn't necessarily have to be blaxploitation. It could just be black. You make a movie about how great of a movie do you think that would be? How prolific of a movie would that be? How much would it speak to the masses? I think a movie about the events in Colin Kaepernick's life would speak volumes, because for some strange reason, the president don't get it. The NFL don't get it. Nobody who voted for 45 gets it. It ain't about the flag. It ain't about the military. And it ain't about disrespect to any of the former. The man was making a social statement. And then that's another thing. All of this police violence. Make that into a movie. Shine a light on it. People want it. They want it to go away. They want things like that to go away, because if it's in the dark, and this might sound super simple, if it's in the dark, it'll never come to light. And things like blaxploitation movies, they shine a light on things in a very fanciful way. In a very over-the-top way, they shine light on stuff. Okay? Again, I say, art imitates life. And in what situation have you seen in a blaxploitation movie a crooked cop, a corrupt cop, a cop taking payoffs, a cop exploiting women, a cop exploiting the black community? Shit. All of them. Nearly all of them. That's the theme. So is this just a theme that was made up, or is this something that actually happened? And people like Samuel Arkoff said, I'm going to take advantage of that dynamic. I'm going to take advantage of that theme, that trope, and I'm going to make 20, 30 movies, and they're all going to be based on that trope. Hollywood is full of remakes and reimaginings that are unimaginative. You remade RoboCop. You remade Charlie's Angels. Some stuff didn't need to be remade that keeps getting remade. And it's like, y'all, stop. It's no need to remake it. If you want to make something, you want to remake something, just like these people are doing now, remake Superfly. So Shaft was remade in 2000, and it had Samuel L. Jackson in it. I don't think it made the impact it should have or could have, because 2018, you make a Shaft movie and draw deep from the original, that movie makes noise. I'm banking on this Superfly flick that's coming out next week. I'm banking on this to sit some kind of way with people. Now, don't get me wrong, y'all. Superfly, the original Superfly, was a great movie, but at the same time, it was rooted in negativity. It was rooted, I mean, the man was a drug dealer. He cheated on his girlfriend. He was a drug dealer, and he did the things that drug dealers do. Same thing with the Mac. The Mac was a fantastic source of pride for black men, but you know what? Goldie was a pimp. Goldie took advantage of women. He used women to get what he wanted, but because he was sticking it to the man, because Priest and Superfly were sticking it to the man, we were willing to look past their sins. We were willing to look past their vices and make them our heroes. That is what I would ask us to do now, and not look at those stereotypes, those tropes of what we think a black person should be, and just go for the nobility that is within it. Because I can remember, you know, Priest and Superfly being a drug dealer with a heart of gold. I can remember Goldie in the Mac being a pimp with a heart of gold. He was still a pimp, don't get me wrong. He was still pimping. I mean, that scene between him and Pretty Tony, and when China Doll walks in there and chooses him, that's still classic. Okay. But at the same time, in within him, I think, you know, the character of Goldie, he just thought pimping was a means to an end. And not necessarily I'm finna be the best pimp that ever did it, but just I want to do this long enough to become. What's wrong with that dynamic in 2018? I mean, we have all of these negative stereotypes and thematic elements and things going on in the black community, and what people say black people are and what people say black people aren't. Take those tropes and make a blaxploitation flick out of them. Make a man in Black Lives Matter, you know, the sweet, sweet back of 2018. You know what I mean? Make these people who are harassed by the police and live to tell the tale about it, the Foxy Browns and the Dolomites of 2018. I mean, what are we doing now that can't be taken and twisted and turned into a negative? I mean, with the advent of it's a double-edged sword. The media does as much harm as it does inform people. And like Daryl always says, make sure the sources that you get your news from are valid, are credible. I love black based things. You got to understand, because it's black based, the bias is towards black. That's what we want, but at the same time, we don't want to overcompensate. Like a lot of times, it's just like the show I was doing last week. Are black people racist? Yeah, they are, and discriminatory and bigoted and everything else you want to use. So let's just give it a blanket term and be done with it. We don't want to err on the side of caution. I think a project like the 2018 Superfly is something that we, as people of color, should latch on to and not look at it as this over-the-top foolishness. I mean, because in 1971, when Sweet Sweet Back Badass Doll came out, do you think people were like, oh, this is a critically acclaimed movie? It's amazing. I think Sweet Sweet Back Badass Song only made like $4.1 million at the box office. That's hella successful when you take into consideration that it didn't take that much to make it. Six six eight two two six eight. I want to know what y'all think. Do you think Blaxploitation can make a successful comeback in the 21st century? Is the pride that Blaxploitation movies generated in the 70s, will it translate to a 2018 sensibility? I say it will, because the climate, the social climate, the political climate in 2018 is very, very similar to the social and political climate in 1971. And life in 1971 is what generated movies like Sweet Sweet Back Badass Song, Foxy Brown, Superfly, The Mac, Dolomite. All of these movies were generated by the current social climate. You look at 2018 and what's going on in our country today, almost identical social political climate. A movie like Superfly has the potential to change a lot of thought process and non-people of color. People of a younger generation who haven't seen a Superfly or a Shaft or a Dolomite. Yeah, you could go back and watch the 1973 versions, the 72 versions, but it becomes a period piece. I think the updating of that same theme, of those same tropes with a modern twist on them, might be exactly what we need right now to wake some people up. I got it. A Blaxploitation movie. I got a Blaxploitation movie. Here's the script. Somebody can write it. Okay. Let's give him a name. His name gonna be Ray Ray Daniels. There you go. Ray Ray Daniels. It's gonna be and Ray Ray is in the Black Lives Matter. You know what I mean? And Ray Ray is at a Black Lives Matter protest when his sweetheart Shaniqua gets shot by some crazy radical neo-Nazis, because they just want to make their point known. And the already extreme Ray Ray is just pushed over the edge by that. And so his whole reason for being now is to get revenge on the neo-Nazis that killed his honey. Tell me that ain't a movie. That's a movie. Somebody give me a script. Somebody give me a director. I bet that'd be one heck of a movie, and I bet people would go see it. You know, these are the kinds of things we need to spark our sensibilities, as well as get those of us who have those adamant thought processes looking at the other side of the aisle. Wink, wink, Sherry Jackson. So that we can become a little more unified. I think if people begin to understand where we're trying to go to, if they look at where we come from, they'll see where we're at. Did I just do a good time? Did I just do James Evans? Unbelievable. Anyway, community has commune and unity in the word. That's what we need to do. if we can commune and unify under things like this, the simple things, the easy things, the things that are easy to unify under, talking about Blaxploitation. Blaxploitation movies is what was happening from 1971 to about 1979 is when it really kind of started to lose speed. But it still continued to exist in the form of movies like Jackie Brown, Undercover Brother, Black Dynamite. You know, make no mistake, you call it a parody of a Blaxploitation movie. Yeah, it's that too, but Black Dynamite is a cult classic. And for those of you that have never seen Black Dynamite before, Black Dynamite is a movie that stars martial artist and actor Michael Jai White, and he basically is doing a spoof of a lot of Blaxploitation movies. There are elements of Shaft, there are elements of Hot Potato, there are elements of Truck Turner, there are elements of Coffee, there are elements of Shaft. All of that is just rolled up into one big spoofation movies. And it is, if you ever get a chance to watch Black Dynamite, please watch it. I think Michael Jai White had his finger on the pulse of what Blaxploitation movies were and how they would transfer into not transfer, but how they would impact a modern day crowd. Black Dynamite was shot in 20 days, y'all. The movie was shot in 20. Screenplay was by Michael Jai White. It starred Michael Jai White, and it seems like whenever you've got a hand in your stuff, you got a hand in your own stuff, it's good. It's amazing. What was the cost? On and I've always wanted to know how do I keep getting kicked off my own show? We're gonna have to talk about this Blog Talk Radio because y'all are getting on a rubber last nerve. Black Dynamite, all time worldwide, made $2,900,000. $242,578 of that was made in the United States. $2 million was not financially a success. I think culturally, it knocked it out of the park. And I think that's largely because of our influence. You know, I watch movies like Saving Private Ryan, and, you know, that's Spielberg and Tom Hanks dealing with things that, you know, to get most of the information, they ask their, you know, their relatives, their ancestors, their fathers, their grandfathers, to tell them about World War II, to paint a picture for them and let them know what was going on. You go to the Black community and ask Black folks to create this picture for you about what goes on in the Black community, what Black people feel like, what Black people are dealing with, what Black people go through. It's us, so why worry about whether or not it's going to be successful and just do it? I'd put some money into a blaxploitation movie. I totally would.
That era,
thought it was going to be successful? Yeah. Right away. But guys, just bear in mind the parallels between the social climate in 1971 and the social climate today. Some of the things that were going on, I think it was the tail end of the 60s, and there was the Vietnam War we had to deal with. There was the civil rights movement. There were riots. I mean, it was just, and we had, it was, the United States was a pressure cooker, very much like it is now. High pressure racial tension. High pressure. I mean, perfect. Perfect time to do something. Let me, before I wrap up, let me pull up a little information about this new Superfly movie, and we can see what we can see. Okay. Wow. Interesting. Future is doing the soundtrack to the new Superfly movie. If you're into the future, see what I did there? If you're into future, I look at this movie, I'm looking at the cast. Not as black as it should be, but it's looking pretty dark there. So, and a lot of parallels between the 72 version and this version. Not that I need to plug this movie for them, but I think it has something to say. I don't think it's going to be, well, let me take that back. I'm not gonna go giving it a review before it's even hit the theater. But I think it's worth it. Even if it isn't as successful as it should be, hopefully it will spark a number of other producers, directors, actors to kind of make a foray into that same direction. You know what I mean? Again, 646-668-2268. I'm about to wrap. If you ain't got nothing to say, I appreciate y'all, like, you know, just letting the brother talk and talk and talk and talk. But I want to hear from you. A lot of what I do is because of y'all. So it would be nice if y'all kind of said something and I don't have to carry the day by myself. Anywho, in short, blaxploitation movies, I think originally were designed to be a source of pride. And much like it always had, original and innovative that we as a people come up with, the culture of it has to be appropriated, bastardized, perverted, made into something that it wasn't necessarily meant to be made into. But I think that much like with any other genre produced by any other ethnic group of people, a source of pride can be found in it. And if we are willing to look into ourselves and find the pride in things like Blackula, Slaughter, Trouble Man, Coffee, and on and on and on, then we, in a sense, find ourselves. Because these characters in these movies did not lack the desire or the drive to take action against wrongs perpetrated against them. We have people who speak on our behalf. We have organizations that are formed for our advancement, for our betterment, who do not act, or we do not act in concert, more accurately. It needs to be a concentrated effort. We are at a crucial period in our history, and there ain't a lot of time for slack. We do what we do to advance. We do what we do to bring understanding, and we do what we do to unify. I believe the resurgence of blaxploitation pictures, as long as we call them something else other than blaxploitation pictures, Black Pride movie wouldn't be terrible. It will create the same dynamic it created in 1971. It will create pride in us, in who we are, and what we do. Make it happen, y'all. And if we aren't in a position to make it happen, let's patronize those that do. I think that's admirable. I think that's noble. I think it can be done. Y'all, this has been Be Real with D Real for Thursday, June 7th, 2018. Join me next week when I will be talking about another interesting and innovative subject that relates to you. Peace and hair grease.